Okay, yes it is. Yes it is. So let me start by just introducing myself a little bit. I am a member of both the Dirt and Cloud Zendo. I got started with a Bright Way 2 or 3 years ago in the middle of the pandemic, and although I live in Portland, I hadn't ever been to the Zendo in Beaverton for like a year. So I feel like I've kind of come through both sides, and I still spend a fair amount of time online with Brightway. I like that very much. I volunteer. I'm a timekeeper on a lot of half the Sundays, a third of the Sundays, and on Thursday morning, when we do just Zazen on those mornings. I have a husband and two grown sons, and I'm an ordained Unitarian minister. So I'm a minister, but I've accepted the precepts. So I have more than one religious identity, and I think of it kind of like having dual passports. And I get a lot of benefit from both sides. So why did I pick this precept, which I didn't, I'm looking at my notes and I didn't even write down which one it was. It's the fourth precept, and it's in its simplest form is do not lie. And I like that form. As I was working on this, I discovered that it's a little muddy in some versions of the precepts. A lot of different speech thing, careful speech. There's a lot about being careful in speech, and lying is thrown in with the other things. But I think lying actually deserves its own precept. So that is the way I'm going to be talking about it today. I had one other opportunity to teach at Brightway, and it was the first time I did it, it was last year, and I wanted to do the lying precept, and I'll tell you why later. And so when I went to sign up, there only one person had got ahead of me, and they had signed up for the lying precept, so I had to pick another one. So this year, I was quick and I got in and I was able to sign up for it. Why did I want this one? Because I had had this insight from reading this book called Dopamine Nation. I don't know if anybody else has heard of that or read it. It's really a fabulous book. It's not a Buddhist text by any shape. It's really about psychology and about our society. And really, it has a lot to do with addiction. It's written by a psychologist or a psychiatrist, I'm not sure which, Anna Lemke. And she really is writing about some of the issues in our society, about how with computers, there's so many opportunities to be addicted to so many different things. And the amount of privacy that we have with computers means that you can be sitting in a room full of people and looking at pornography and nobody would even know it, So those kinds of so she's familiar with all those kinds of addictions because that's what her specialty is. But next week is really the addiction. Do not take intoxicants, I think it is. The book Dopamine Nation is about addiction, but it ends with this perfect story about lying. And when I read it, I thought of the Dharma, and I was going, here it is, this is a psychologist writing a book about addiction, and I feel like I just read something that comes straight from the Dharma. And so I wonder, that was a question that maybe I should have asked Domio last week, was, what is the Dharma? Can it be anything? So I sometimes think that it could be anything. So the book's good, but it was the story about lying at the end of the book that really knocked my socks off. And so let me tell you a little bit about it, just to kind of get you ready, and then I'm going to read the story. Dopamine Nations, like I said, is about addiction in America. And Anna Lemke says we are awash in ways to be addicted. The dopamine in the title is the little chemical that we get in our brains every time it's like a reward chemical. And she thinks we're all addicted to it. And this relates it to lying. We have as many ways of covering up and hiding our behaviors from others as we have ways of being addicted. So when I heard this story, it became a koan for me. And I thought about it a lot, and it did affect my behavior and my decisions about things. So here's the story. A doctor came to a psychiatrist, Anna Lemke, to get cleared to practice medicine. The doctor in question had gotten a DUI as a young man. Everyone told him to fight the charge. He set himself up to do that, hiring a lawyer and preparing himself to say not guilty. He had been caught with alcohol in his system. He'd been given the test and it was over the limit. But there were some extenuating circumstances. When he finally, it was his first time that he'd ever been caught, and it was kind of out in the country and he wasn't speeding. But when he finally stood in front of the judge, he said, when he was asked whether he was guilty or not guilty, he said guilty instead. He just said guilty, he blurted it out. And as a result, he lost his driver's license. To get it back, he had to pay thousands of dollars in fines and attend many hours of state-mandated DUI classes. His lawyer was so disgusted with him that he gave him back his fee and just shook his head. But that wasn't the end of it. Every time he moved or was employed by someone new, he would be asked on a standard employment form if he had ever had a DUI. His friends, they knew what he was doing, and they would say, "Just don't tell them. No one is ever going to investigate you." But he would always check the box. He would check, yes, he had had a DUI. So states, some states especially, take DUIs extremely seriously, and especially for those practicing medicine. When he moved to California for his residency, he lost his driver's license again until he took California's mandated DUI classes. In California, there is no reciprocity between states for DUI classes. So if he'd said he'd never had a DUI, he would have just sailed in and gotten a new driver's license. But he told them when he was asked. And he had a lot of trouble at the beginning of his residency because he needed to be at the hospital at different times. And so he had to take the bus till he finally got through all his DUI classes. And it was a huge hassle. So why was he in front of a psychiatrist telling this story? because he was changing hospitals. And every time he had a job change, he would go through something like this because he had a DUI. But he had no regrets. His family had struggled with addiction, and his honesty had created a clear line which hadn't existed before. He was perfectly happy to do those things, and he never drank. So that's the story. So why did it grip me so much? Well, as many of those stories, sometimes you don't actually know. I have some inklings because when I read it, I was just like, ah, that's just amazing. I think some of it had to do with becoming a Buddhist right about then and looking at the precepts. And even though I wasn't reading it under the, I wasn't reading that story at a time when I was working on writing up one of the precepts or studying them intensely. I'd heard of them, I'd read them. I'm not sure if I had taken the precepts yet. But I think I also recognized myself in some way. I could relate to that story so much, but the relating I was relating were with the friends who were telling him, "Don't tell them you have a DUI." That was where I had probably would have landed. I would have been rolling my eyes at this guy doing this, and yet I realized that I really admired him. Now, this is something that some of you may relate to or not, but I have this whole bunch of behaviors that I would call good woman behaviors or addictions. They're not that bad. You know, I've never been an alcoholic. I've never been addicted to drugs. But I have these, I call them, they're good woman addictions. It's like when somebody sees you doing them, they might even admire you. One of them is sometimes is reading excessively and sometimes junky books that I just love to get the sensation from. The other, you know, these are so, such dumb little things. Sudoku. I love Sudoku. And if somebody hands me a book of Sudokus and I start it, I will keep working on it and working on it until I do every single one. It's terrible. One time I got addicted to this dumb online game called FreeCell. Has anyone out there played FreeCell? My kids would just laugh at me. What are you playing that dumb game for? So, I just recognized somehow the connection with the lying and these kinds of behaviors because when I would do them, I wouldn't tell anyone about them. And like if I was playing FreeCell and somebody came up behind me, I would have this great, you know, this great big startle reflex, you know, and I probably looked really guilty. What I came to realize that it's not really the behavior, just like in Washington scandals, it's not really the behavior that gets you, it's the cover up. And so what I came to believe is that those avoidance, that sort of little minor lying about what you're up to, you're hiding your true self, you're projecting another person, and you're protecting yourself. You're protecting your persona. So I also just admired the doctor for his choices and his courage and that bright white line between lying, between his behavior and his admitting and owning it. So it did start to affect my behavior. One of the things that I was doing for a long time was I had two employees that care for my mother, and I was, paying them, and I used a tax preparation. So I was paying them under the table, but man, that was tempting. It was tempting to do it in certain kinds of situations, and I just stopped ever doing that. I just stopped. It was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And it felt so much better. It's just like no decision, you just do it. So I do believe that there's a connection between lying and addiction. And in fact, I can't remember who it was, but one commentator I read said that there's probably a reason that lying is in as its position in the precepts is between sexuality and addiction, two very strong pulls and drives, and then right in the middle is lying. Now, I think that connection, I mean, between lying and addiction. I think that lying, there's more reasons than just addiction to lie. But a very strong reason is that we lie to get away with something. And it's ultimately because we want to maintain others' good opinion of us. So, I mean, it just seems like there's a very strong link. And that's pretty much what I've prepared. So I was thinking that we could do some breakouts and the question would be, I presented one view of lying, which with its connection with maintaining our reputations while doing something that we don't, that doesn't quite fit in with that person. And I think a good question would be, are there other reasons we lie? I mean, I'm sure there are. And where in you and the other question would be, where in your life do you find yourself tempted to lie or habitually lying? I think those are kind of interesting questions. So, oh, it's 8:23, so that's earlier than I thought it would be. But it's a good time to do it.
All right, for 10 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right.
Up in your girls. Oh. Leah, go ahead.
Hi, Katie.
Hi.
I was taking notes. I feel like a very take note-taking person tonight. So I'm just sitting here listening to everything and writing it all down. I'll remember this better later. Anyway, so we talked about lying to escape conflict, lying to protect the other person, and we talked about those little white lies that you tell when somebody says, "Oh, come on over," and you say, "Oh, I gotta wash the dog," or some excuse like that, and you don't, but you just don't feel like going anywhere. Oh, we lie to get something, like getting a job, like first interview. We lie to save money, for example, on our taxes. And in general, it's very difficult to not lie at all. And that's what's meant by putting forth not one word, which I'm glad I didn't really understand that part. So I'm sort of glad to think about that. And it's not a box you check. Tyler said this part, it's not a box you check, because it's kind of broad and expands the more you look at it. So it's more something you work with and make it part of your life and practice with it instead of checking the box, because it's very hard to do that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think one of the things that really appealed to me that story that I told was the fact that it was like this line. I mean, it just seemed heroic what he was doing. But I think what you're saying is, you know, more the way it is for most everyone. And it probably, and possibly for him in other areas of his life. What, is there anybody else out there that wants to, another group? I know there is other groups. Dennis, go ahead.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Dennis.
So I'd like to know what that guy's psychologist said to him after he talked to her about him not lying on any of his applications and all that. What was the reaction?
Well, she was, you know, she was all for it. I mean, she had made, she had that story at the end of her book because she wanted to make very clear the connection between addiction and lying. And that it, you know, that when you're addicted to something, you lie. And when one of the treatments for addiction is to not lie, you know, stop lying about it, come clean. So
cool. So she supported him 100%.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah.
So yeah, we had a similar discussion to what Leah was talking about, where is it lying if you avoid confrontation? You know, these days, society is so divided that when certain topics come up, you maybe backpedal before you really divulge your true opinion to avoid conflict or to avoid, you know, a circular conversation that'll go nowhere or, you know, go somewhere bad. And, you know, is that lying?
Oh yeah, I think that you're starting to get into that. I mean, because they all grade into each other, but I think that's skillful speech. And there is one in that Cohen book that was a study book. There was one Cohen that was about that. It was this woman who always spoke the truth. It was kind of like the and it's like whenever she saw something that was out of, it's towards the end of the book, and basically her teacher said, what would have happened if you hadn't said anything? And then she was like, enlightened. Well, and it was like, and it never occurred to her.
Yeah, that was just something that we kicked around, you know, and it's, you know, the little white lies that you, any of the little white lies that you tell, like Leah was talking about, you know, to avoid conflict and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
there is a kind of a skillful way to be completely authentic and yet disagree with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, or just pick the moment to talk about it rather than just as soon as they say something, you know, squash them down with your truth.
Yeah. So, okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
S- So I've come to sort of a conclusion after our breakout and after just hearing the first couple of examples here. For good or for bad, lying can be a protection. It can simply be a form of protection. The easiest example that we started out with in my discussion group was when somebody asks you how you're doing and you say you're fine. I mean, that's just to keep me from having to tell you really how I'm doing, because I don't want to talk about it. And I don't particularly want to talk to you about it and all this blah, blah, blah. So, but it's just a protective mechanism. And I think the type of lying that we're talking about here in this precept, I don't know. Maybe the type of lying that psychiatrist was telling in her book toward the end, the story that you told us, it feels a little bit more stark, a little bit more right and wrong, as opposed to, you know, a little bit more facing the truth and how difficult that is versus letting it go because I want to have an easier morning than having to talk to you about what's been going on in my life. Another thing, an extreme example that we came up with in our discussion was denial. And if anybody has experienced that, I have experienced it a couple of times in my life. You don't know what's going on when it's happening. But when you get through this awful thing that you're trying to protect yourself from, and you look back and you think, oh my God, I was just in so much denial, and you're just covered up with embarrassment. And why didn't anybody tell me? Why didn't anybody shake me and make me see the truth? And that to me is a pretty clear definition of lying. And it's also a pretty clear definition of protecting myself so that I can move forward.
It also sounds like suffering too, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of suffering.
The way I look at this, I mean this to be helpful, and then I'll step down. The thing about not putting forth one word to me is a reference to the fact that I create my world with what I see and what I think about it and what I tell others about it and what I tell myself about it. And so it's just the reference that we all create these stories about ourselves. And particularly on your first day or two of session, it's just story after story after story, and you cannot turn them off, no matter how hard you try. And so it's a reference to the fact that what we think is just not necessarily true. And so if you say nothing, that's the only way to really avoid lying, is say nothing. So at least that's the way I interpret that statement. Thanks.
I think Ruth Ann had her hand up.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Ruth Ann.
Let's see, am I muted?
No, we can hear you.
Actually, I didn't. I was listening, but I appreciate the three previous comments. And right speech or skillful speech. In our group, I think it was Marvin brought up the topic of sometimes not using that with yourself. You know, where I know I've been guilty of just not being truthful with me, even though about my own behavior, actions, thinking, even though it didn't set any domino effect of harm, but I wasn't straight with myself about how I could have reacted more skillfully, even if it wasn't necessarily in speech, but just reaction behavior. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that has? Oh, Betty, go ahead.
Thanks. One of the examples that comes to mind, because we study kind of ethical and moral dilemmas in like physical therapy education, which is my background, is the consequences of telling the truth in its totality at the cost of like a patient getting denied care as a result because your insurance will no longer cover whatever the services you're providing. So, you know, you're kind of presented with the consequences of truth-telling being a negative outcome for the person that you're providing care for. So that's just an area of struggle. You know, try to be really honest all the time, but, you know, sometimes it feels like the consequences of telling the truth, and we talked about this a little bit in our group, the consequences of telling the truth is burdensome for some other party. So anyway, just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, when I was researching, there was like this one story, and I still kind of like, yeah, I don't know what I would do there. It was, you know, these two guys are in father and son in the forest, and it's an old Buddhist story. And robbers are coming in, and they say, pretend we don't know each, or don't let them know our relationship, because if they know that that you're my son or I'm your father, then they will grab one of us and hold us for ransom, and, you know, and then get the other one to pay them. And so it was like, so they lied about who they were. And then afterwards they, you know, renounced their, I mean, they sort of renounced their lives and went into, you know, kind of a different state of life because they were so worried about the bad karma that they would have created in that situation. I am not that evolved yet. I can't even really give a good interpretation or advice on that one, because I probably would lie to save somebody's life or in some situations. That example I gave about my caregivers, I gave them both big bonuses when my mom died. And that was a time when I kind of was thinking, I could probably just give them a check and not report it and all that, because it was, you know, it involved a lot of taxes. And I thought, gee, you know, they could end up with a higher, you know, paying more taxes than they realize, because they would have to pay too, you know, out of this. But I didn't. I ran it through the tax preparing. I knew that there could be some negative consequences for them. So, but that was not as extreme as some of these other examples. Any other?
Tyler's got his hand up.
Pardon?
Tyler?
Hi. Yeah, I guess I just wanted to comment. What I've found interesting about this, the conversations everyone's having, is just that we've all, I guess, there all seems to be things we're willing to lie about, things we've decided are okay to lie about, and things that aren't. And we all probably have different lines on where that line is. And I think it's just the practice of reflecting on why we've decided that in this instance lying is okay, and that instance it isn't. Is always, to me, the most interesting practice when going through this. And why have I decided that this lie is okay? Like you were saying, you know, a thing, I used to work at the Ministry of Social Development, which was the which is basically the welfare office. And I knew that if clients said certain things, they might end up being like owing money back, or they might not get their rent for that month, or like, and helping them through this process, exactly, being like, you know, or just be like, oh, I didn't quite hear you there, but here's something you want, you know, like lies, because if I went full truth, like they could lose their homes, and I wasn't okay with that. And that's like a, but so that's maybe more of a like a one less people, you know, well, people are, that's more of a big example, but there's just why we choose what's okay to lie about and what isn't, to me, is the really the interesting part.
Thanks, Tyler. Yeah, I know that is a rub. But so is there anything more that people want to say? I had this list that Seth Segal, the existential Buddha, put out. This list of 600.
Hey, can I interject for a second? I'm sitting in the speaker's chair. I don't want to.
What?
I'm sitting here in the speaker's chair. I was waiting to talk. Can
I? Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, go. Please go.
My thoughts are still forming on this, but when we say the precept out loud that we should not lie, that sounds an awful lot like we're talking about something that would be called a sin. We don't, I think, so far, as I know, trade in the language of like sin, like something is an absolute wrong. And we keep going back and forth on under what circumstances is okay to do this and that. I have this intuition that skillful means and lying sometimes can be a distinction without a difference. And we do advocate for skillful means. We have stories about telling children about a story to get them out of a burning house, or a wealthy father deceiving his son to reach certain ends. So I don't know. This isn't fully formed, but I feel like these what we'd like to be bright lines aren't necessarily so, right?
Right. Yeah. Still, I love that story. So here, let me share with you the different kinds of lies. So because mostly I talked about this connection between lying and maintaining your own position in the world. You're maintaining this kind of false front. You're doing one thing and saying another. So these are the six types of lies, according to Seth. Lie to aggrandize the self. That's the one I mostly talked about. To lie to avoid shame and blame. And yeah, we've all done that. Three, lies to take advantage of others. Four, lies to cause malicious harm. That would be gossip. Lying gossip. Lies to protect others from embarrassment. White lies. Lies to help others. And he put in parentheses skillful means. So yeah, there's a lot of different kinds of lies. There might be others that aren't on this list. And let's see, it's 8:55. I think I have time to read this because I thought this was good. It's pretty short. This is from Tenzin Reb Anderson. His great book on the precepts. Because we feel anxious and uncomfortable when we are aware that we are lying, it's easier for us to lie when we are unaware of doing so. Thus, carelessness and self-deception smooth the path of deceiving others, and we can lie more convincingly if we are lying to ourselves. With the aid of such denial, we can be confidently self-righteous even when we're lying. Furthermore, lying is easier if we lack the wholesome self-respect that comes with a commitment to speaking the truth. And then he goes on to say, the hallmark of abusive and addictive behavior is that we feel that we have to lie about it. So that's a setup for you, Dave, for next week. Well, that's the end of my presentation, and I was hoping that Domyo would say the ritual words at the end.
Thanks, Katie.
Yeah, you're welcome, Bruce. Or somebody.
So, thanks, Katie. And we offer the merit of this Sangha discussion to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Pranya Paramita. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks.